Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Tuesday, April 29th. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Julia. Front page articles include Viola Awards celebrated, FUSD sees promise in CTE programs, railroad safety efforts on track, and SUPS approve updated Fort Tuthill Master Plan. The first article we'll read today is Viola Awards Celebrated. Creative Flagstaff celebrates 17th annual Viola Award winners in an unforgettable evening. Creative Flagstaff is proud to announce the winners of the 17th annual Viola Awards, a night that brought together community, creativity, and celebration. The event on Saturday was a joyful tribute to the people and organizations who continue to shape and inspire Flagstaff's vibrant cultural scene. The evening featured a high-energy performance by local band August Remedy and a moving rendition of Seasons of Love from Rent, performed by the finalists in the Excellence in Performing Arts category, adding extra heart to an already unforgettable celebration. This year's award recipients include Legacy Award, Randy Bowman; Excellence in Music, August Remedy; Emerging Artist, Ian Hall; Excellence in Storytelling, Pop Goes the Ferret; Local Artisan, Jara Nez; Excellence in Visual Arts, Jaquez Caso Seronde; Excellence in Education for Organization, Momentum Aerial; Excellence in Education Individual, Heather Curtin; Excellence in Performing Arts, Cabaret, Stargazer Collaborative Theater; Excellence in Collaboration, The Flagstaff Foundry, Art in the Open; Community Impact, Individual, Candace Ryan Schmidt; and Community Impact Organization, Open Doors, Art in Action. We are so honored to recognize these incredible individuals and organizations, said Julie Komnick, Executive Director of Creative Flagstaff. This year's event was not only a celebration of artistic excellence, but a joyful reminder of the strength and creativity that define our community. The Viola Awards are named after Viola Babbitt, a founding member of the Flagstaff Arts community, and are presented annually to recognize excellence in the arts, sciences, and community leadership. Thank you to everyone who joined us to celebrate another remarkable year in Flagstaff's creative journey. We can't wait to see you again next year. And that was the article, Viola Awards Celebrated. The next article for today is FUSD Sees Promise in CTE Programs. FUSD Facilitating Career-Ready and Independent Students Through CTE Programs. Part of Flagstaff Unified School District's FUSD mission is to provide students with diverse pathways and the necessary tools to succeed. Integrating Career and Technical Education, CTE, assists the district in achieving this. CTE is a type of education combining academic and technical skills meant to prepare students for post-secondary education or the workforce. Between Coconino High School and Flagstaff High School, there are 16 CTE programs. These cover skills from traditional industry trades, such as welding and automotive, to graphic design and film and television production. Over half of the programs are available at both high schools, with some being exclusive to one. For example, sports medicine is only available at FHS, while agriscience is only at CHS. In FUSD's effort To support CTE learning, it has partnered with Coconino Association for Vocations, Industry and Technology, CAVIAT, Coconino Community College, Yavapai College, YC, and other organizations in the area to organize and fund the program. CAVIAT is one of the career and technical education districts in Arizona, and an overlay school district to FUSD. FUSD and CAVIAT partner with Coconino Community College and Yavapai College to offer high school students dual enrollment for the opportunity to earn college credits toward a degree or industry certifications. CTE was uniquely positioned to provide a great education for students, said Thomas Safranek, FUSD's Director of College and Career Development. There's a lot of benefits to CTE because it's a holistic educational model. They're not just learning one thing, they're learning a number of things that are all tied together in a relevant and meaningful way for them. Safranek said CTE is a premier model of education and that it shows in the students. According to an article written in 2022 by the U.S. News and World Report, high school students who complete at least 2 credits in a CTE program have a 95% graduation rate, roughly 10% of the national average. Facilitating such success rates and an engaging environment in which students want to get hands-on experience starts with the teachers. According to Safranek, the CTE program has always been fortunate enough to have exceptional educators who can make connections with students and get them excited about what they're learning. The right mix. Dante Delia teaches the sports medicine course at FHS and is part of the greater effort in furthering students' passion for their futures. Delia became a teacher at FHS in 2017 as a step toward her goal of becoming an athletic trainer. She has worked at FHS since then, doing both athletic training and sports medicine. She teaches 3 periods of the sport medicine course, level 1, 2, and 3. A typical class starts with Delia's housekeeping, which is letting students know the plan for the day or week, showing them important notes and announcements. After announcements for the day and sharing their daily gratitude, students are left to work on the assigned lab or are taken through a lecture for material they'll need to know for the week's curriculum. During her lectures, Delia gets to tell her students stories from her time as an athlete and the injuries she has seen. Then she relates those stories to her curriculum, running her students through labs that analyze sport-related injuries. Teaching the courses has allowed Delia to combine her love for being an athletic trainer with educational tools. She said it is fun getting to interact with her students, but that people underestimate the time it takes to build a positive rapport and environment with them. It takes intentional efforts from educators to make their students feel comfortable in being vulnerable and learning to discover something they didn't know. It is worth it to Delia, however, to take the time to build trust with the students she has known from their freshman to senior years and has seen her program grow because of that connection. I just got my numbers in for Sports Medicine 1, and I have 95 kids that want to sign up for it, and I can only take 60, Delia said. It's a good feeling. Seeing her program gain more demand, the district office has been supportive in letting Delia manage the class in ways that fit best for her teaching style and has made any resources available to her to improve and maintain the class. She is enthusiastic about keeping each class exciting and different for her students. Delia said her goal as an educator is to help her students be better than they were the day before and encourage them to want to grow. It's amazing seeing my students grow and develop and find their voice and passions, Delia said. And some of it has to do with the things that I teach, and it's very rewarding. Beyond the classroom. Through the sports medicine program, Delia created an internship offering students the experience of working in her on-campus clinic, learning about sports medicine using real people. Exclusive opportunities are part of what Delia said makes CTE programs so essential to students. Among these innovative programs is yearbook and digital photography, taught by Kelly Marquez. Ironically, Marquez wanted to become an athletic trainer as well, but soon realized the student-focused aspect of education was what she enjoyed more. She went on to study secondary English with hopes of becoming a yearbook teacher because of her love for journalism when she was in high school. Marquez started her own photography business to gain career experience, and when a yearbook position opened up at the high school, she went for it. This is now her fourth year at CHS teaching photography and yearbook. Photography 1 is a required prerequisite for the rest of the photography classes Marquez teaches. The photography class follows a weekly schedule. It shows when students will have a project for the week and when they will go through rigorous training Monday through Friday to learn what will be expected of them in a professional setting. After every assignment is turned in on Friday, Marquez and her class talk about career skills they are learning about and how they can be utilized to build their portfolios. Marquez said the best part about being an educator under a CTE program is watching her students apply what she has taught them to areas outside the classroom. The students in her class find their passion for the course beyond the classroom, and some will go on to study photography or other facets of journalism in college or go straight in the career field. It's the best position to ever be in, Marquez said. You have students who want to be there. They find a passion that is something they thrive in, and they're excited to come to class. It just makes it a really fun day. Most of the students in this pathway will do both photography and yearbook to get their hand in different features of multimedia. In the photography class, students are becoming proficient in their camera and editing skills and learning the professionalism they need to have clients and build a business. Supplementary to that, being a part of the yearbook course shows students the importance of deadlines and managing the production of their work. In the yearbook class, Marquez has leaned more into the journalistic route. She pushes her students to put intention behind every caption, quote, and headline, emphasizing that they should create a story or meaning behind each photo. This is to teach them the significance of creating something meaningful to be shared with people for years to come, symbolic of what yearbooks aim to do. When a student completes the photography program, they can receive a certificate classifying them as an Adobe expert. The certificate can be used as experience on their resumes if they choose to pursue a career in photography. Marquez said CTE programs help reach a population of students that might not be acknowledged, such as artistic and skill-based individuals. She said she is proud to see the students who join her class freshman year flourish as they continue in a program fitted to them and their learning style. I strive to have strong, independent, and skilled people to enter the real world, Marquez said. It's my goal to build a strong foundation for them to be successful. And that was the article, FUSD Sees Promise in CTE Programs. The next article for today is Railroad Safety Efforts on Track. Safety improvements to Flagstaff's railroad crossings near completion, months after original deadline. When city staff and a federal railroad safety inspector spoke to the Flagstaff City Council back in January, it seemed there was a clear and pressing deadline for safety changes at Flagstaff's railroad crossings. unless some short-term improvements to reduce the risk of pedestrian fatalities could be completed by the end of February, Flagstaff was in danger of losing the quiet zone designation, allowing trains to proceed through the city's crossing without sounding their horns. Fast forward a few months to April, and it turns out that deadline wasn't so firm as it first seemed. The interim safety improvements to Flagstaff's railroad crossings are not yet complete. Moreover, the federally regulated quiet zone has not been suspended, even though three more pedestrians have died and a fourth suffered non-fatal injuries after being struck by freight trains in Flagstaff this year. Warren Blateau, Deputy Director of Public Affairs for the Federal Railroad Administration, FRA, said, "The city has been very proactive and has been working in concert with numerous parties to mitigate the impact of these fatalities, which could result in the quiet zone being suspended if it exceeded a statistical safety threshold." Evidently, three additional deaths were not enough to cross that threshold. The FRA extended the original February 28th deadline to complete the safety improvements, according to project manager Christine Cameron of the city's Capital Improvements section. "The agency was monitoring the city's progress and was satisfied," Cameron said, "but no FRA personnel have visited Flagstaff in person since last November," Blateau acknowledged. Flagstaff's railroad crossing have been a known hotspot for railroad fatalities for years. A 2022 report by the Arizona Department of Transportation noticed that 47% of all fatal train collisions in the state between 2016 and 2020 happened here, ahead of more significant overhauls in Flagstaff's larger downtown mile project. The improvements laid out at the January 10th Flagstaff City Council meeting were supposed to be relatively simple upgrades to improve pedestrian safety at Flagstaff's five at-grade railroad crossings. Work on that project is not scheduled to begin for at least another year. The list of short-term fixes included repairing existing fencing, adding new fencing, and adding new signage, including signs that display contact information for the suicide hotline. The Arizona Daily Sun visited all five crossings at Beaver Street, San Francisco Street, Ponderosa Parkway, Steves Boulevard, and Fanning Drive on April 9th and again on April 24th to view the project's progress. To an average observer, the changes are not dramatic. Segments of new metal fencing and temporary orange plastic roll fencing were evident at all of the crossings by the second visit, though gaps in the fencing large enough to permit easy access by any motivated pedestrian were also still present. As of April 24th, no new signage has been installed, but on April 25th, a freshly painted warning, "See Tracks, Think Trains," was visible on the sidewalk at San Francisco Street. Despite the two-month delay, Cameron said, "We've expedited this beyond my wildest dreams, to tell the truth." Cameron said the new signs had been designed, ordered, and delivered, but could not be hung until the fence installation was finished. She added that some of the signs were going to be installed directly on the new fences, and that installing separate posts or poles could have complicated the fence installation. "You don't want to have already put a sign in that location where the fence needs to go," Cameron said, explaining that the fences had to be carefully located to avoid any conflicts with underground utilities. She also noted that some of the work was slowed by winter weather and that all aspects of the project required close coordination with both BNSF and the FRA. In total, the city has installed 1,761 linear feet of new fencing. That includes the fencing around the five at grade crossings, as well as in some additional areas identified as common social trails or unapproved access points. Flagstaff's most recent pedestrian fatalities all happened away from established crossings. Two people were struck and killed while attempting to cross the tracks east of Country Club Drive on March 14th. A third person was struck and killed in a separate incident on March 14th, west of the Beaver Street crossing. And on the afternoon of Wednesday, April 23rd, the Flagstaff Police Department responded to a man who had been struck by a freight train between Steves Boulevard and Fanning Drive. The pedestrian survived, but he was transported to the hospital with a fractured pelvis. No definitive cause has been announced for any of the incidents. The Arizona Daily Sun reached out to BNSF to ask what measures or actions the railway encourages from local partners to help prevent pedestrian fatalities outside of designated crossing areas. In response, BNSF media representative Kendall Sloan stated, "Promoting rail safety is an essential part of our operation and culture. Trains cannot stop quickly," Sloan continued. "A 100-car freight train traveling at 55 miles per hour will need more than a mile to stop once the train is set into emergency braking. When vehicle drivers or pedestrians violate traffic laws, at grade crossings, or trespass onto railroad right-of-way, they are putting themselves and the train crews in danger." She added, "We work with and support Operation Lifesaver in our states and nationally." Operation Lifesaver is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting railroad safety through public education. The city of Flagstaff has been using some of the organization's materials for its public outreach efforts, which were another component of the interim safety improvements. Cameron said the city is collaborating with schools, the Flagstaff Family Food Center, Flagstaff Shelter Services, and even local restaurants and bars to distribute Operation Lifesaver's educational materials. The city has also purchased radio ads promoting rail crossing safety to air locally and across the Navajo and Hopi reservations. Taken together, fencing and education aim to steer people away from unauthorized crossing points and toward existing pedestrian crossings. One alternative approach is to build new crossing infrastructure in areas where there is a clear desire or demand for access. The Downtown Mile Project, for instance, includes plans for a new pedestrian underpass west of Beaver Street, linking Florence and Walnut Streets. The area at which two people died attempting to cross the tracks in March, east of Country Club Drive, has no official pedestrian crossings. Asked whether the city had considered the possibility of adding an over or underpass in that zone, Cameron said, "People take the path of least resistance. It's hard to pick out one area and say, this is where we want an established crossing. I don't believe BNSF would support that," she added. The interim improvements to the at-grade crossings should be finished soon, though Cameron did not provide an exact date. Meanwhile, design work for the Downtown Mile project is at about 90% completion, with construction slated to begin in spring or summer 2026. The police department intends to install cameras to help monitor railroad crossings, Cameron noted, but that's unlikely to happen until after the end of the current fiscal year. "The city's concerned about the fatalities, for sure. We want to bring those down as much as possible," she said. The overall effort depends on what BNSF calls the three E's: engineering, education, and enforcement. We want to keep people safe, Cameron added. That's the bottom line. And that was the article, Safety Improvements to Flagstaff's Railroad Crossings Near Completion, Months After Original Deadline. You're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. The next article for today is SUPS approve updated Fort Tuthill Master Plan. Credited with paving the way for the addition of a bike park and an 18-hole disc golf course, the 2013 Fort Tuthill County Park Master Plan provided a roadmap for how best utilize Coconino County's most high-profile park. Roughly 11 months after the Coconino County's Parks and Recreation Department began developing an updated master plan for Fort Tuthill, the Board of Supervisors approved the aspirational vision for the 633 acres of county land just south of Flagstaff. It's important to note that master plans are aspirational, Cynthia Nemeth Brain, the Coconino County Parks and Recreation Director, told the board to begin the presentation. What you'll hear about today, what you'll read about in the plan itself, they do not obligate the agency to actually fund the recommendations or implement them. If opportunities arise, as I like to say, if the stars all align, we'll have a decision-making tool that we can go to. As a part of the plan's development process, Coconino County's contracted consulting team of Global Local Vision and Wheat Design Group generated recommendations from multiple sources. As detailed in the presentation to the County Board during its April 22nd meeting, County Parks and Recreation staff, the County's Park and Recreation Commission, the board itself, community stakeholders, members of the general public, and current parks and recreation trends were all considered when creating the list of recommendations. To our knowledge, at least 702 people participated, and that is very good for the window of opportunity we had available for public comment, said Nancy Wonders from Global Local Vision. We were very pleased. We thought it was a very robust and diverse participation. It also reflects the kind of interest that exists with respect to Fort Tuthill County Park. We felt people wanted to come out. They wanted to have their views heard because they care so much about the park. The list encompassed a wide range of suggestions, starting with a desire to preserve the natural areas, particularly the trail systems that allow access to the surrounding natural areas. There were also a series of practical recommendations, such as upgrades to the existing buildings and infrastructure, a centralized plaza, a new kiosk, a new multi-use building, and more restrooms and ramadas. Finally, some suggestions involved park use options, like pickleball courts and a re-envisioned equestrian arena and racetrack. The proposed four-phase process came with the total price tag of nearly $45 million, with phases costing $7.8 million, about $15 million, $12.2 million, and just under $10 million. Director Nemeth mentioned that this was an aspirational plan, and we are presenting you also an aspirational budget, said Fred Solop of Global Local Vision. Very broadly, in phase one, we're going for some high-demand items, some low-budget items. Among multiple recommendations, the first phase would include a traffic study, a transit and rideshare drop-off area, new ramadas, pickleball courts, interpretive signage, and a new restroom for the planned heart of the park, which would be created in phase two. A park promenade, a welcome kiosk, multi-use pathways, and a realignment of Soldiers Trail would be among the plans for phase two. Various equestrian complex improvements, northern entry improvements, and quad building renovations would be included in phase three, while the new multi-purpose 4-H building would highlight phase four. This is going to be the toughest budget you ever go through, but you can't deny planning and vision. You've got to hold on to that, so that 10 years, 20 years from now, we can have the community that we have today and we want for tomorrow. Brian Blue, District 3's Parks and Recreation Commissioner, told the board, "I just ask you, do not be afraid of the $45 million. Just envision what we can. We don't know what the future is going to bring. It is far more uncertain today than I think it's ever been, but we still have to plan and envision." Citing the success of the park's current public-private partnerships, such as the Pepsi Amphitheater, the Flagstaff Extreme Adventure Course, the Bike Park and Disc Golf Course, the updated master plan called for the pursuit of additional partnerships, such as regular food vendor and a vendor to manage amenities, such as the proposed pickleball courts. As was mentioned, we don't have the funding for it right now, but by having the vision and the plan, when those funding opportunities arise, we'll be ready, said District 2 Supervisor Geronimo Vasquez. In particular, those private-public partnerships, I think there's some great opportunities, and we just need to keep grinding, keep putting together our plans, be persistent, and it'll come to fruition. All four supervisors in attendance at the meeting voted to approve the plan and acknowledged that while the cost appears high at first glance, it was crucial to have a plan in place moving forward. I do think we are so fortunate to have Fort Tuthill. It is a really incredible asset for us here in Coconina County, said District 1 Supervisor and Board Vice Chair Patrice Horseman. It's well-loved and well-used, and yet I think it can be loved more and used more. The complete 156-page master plan can be found at coconino.az.gov/279/fort-tuthill-county-park. And that was the article, Updated Fort Tuthill Master Plan, approved by Coconino County Board of Supervisors. The next local story for today is animal welfare, volunteering for local nonprofits that help pets. Spring is here, and with it comes thoughts of renewal and growth. One of the best ways I've found to feel renewed and to grow as a person is through volunteering. There are many wonderful nonprofits in Flagstaff that need help, including those that help animals and their people. Here are messages from some of those organizations with what they do and how you can contribute. High Country Humane. As the contracted shelter for the city of Flagstaff and Coconino County, we intake strays, abandoned animals, arrest holds, hospital holds, owner passed away holds, cruelty investigations, bite holds, and more. Our team runs sizable foster and volunteer programs. To the community, we offer a pet food bank, low-cost vaccine clinics, low-cost spay and neuter appointments, low-cost euthanasia services, rehoming services, and a TNR/community cat program. Our small but mighty shelter accomplishes so much. Volunteer needs. Bottle baby fosters. Urgently. Summer is upon us, and we don't have many neonate fosters. Dog team volunteers. Dedicated volunteers who go through dog training with us and can come consistently to take dogs on walks, hikes, and supervise playgroups, or do one-on-one enrichment with dogs that need it. Event volunteers. outgoing folks who love animals and want to help shelter pets find forever homes at our adoption events. Cleaning volunteers. Laundry and dog dishes are so important for the animals. Contact info, 11665 North Highway 89, Flagstaff AZ 86004, 928-526-0742, www.highcountryhumane.org or support@highcountryhumane.org or reach out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/highcountryhumane. Coconino Humane Association. At the Coconino Humane Association, we are committed to enhancing the lives of animals and supporting their families. Comprehensive services include low-cost spay and neuter clinics, vaccination and wellness clinics, pet adoptions, emergency and disaster response for animals, animal adventure summer camps, and education and outreach. Volunteer needs include animal care, feeding and socialization, assisting at clinics and adoption events, supporting our summer camps, and educational outreach programs, assisting with transportation for animals and supplies, contributing to fundraising, marketing, or administrative tasks, joining our disaster response team to help during emergencies. Contact info is 3501 East Butler Avenue, Flagstaff AZ 86004, 928-526-1076, www.coconinohumane.org, or Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at coconinohumane.org, or reach out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/coconino.humane. The next organization that is seeking out volunteers is the Ark Cat Sanctuary. We are a 24/7, 365-day, no-kill and largely cage-free operation located in Parks AZ, dedicated to the rescue, care, and placements of cats and kittens that are in at-risk situations. We answer calls for help from shelters, rescue groups, and the public. Volunteer needs include driving cats to and from spay and neuter and other appointments and transport cats from other organizations, foster cats and kittens until they can be placed at PetSmart, supplies and medical support are provided. Contact info is P.O. Box 30098, Flagstaff AZ 86003, 928-613-2090, www.arkcatssanctuary.org, info@arkcatsanctuary.org, and www.facebook.com/arkcatsanctuary. The next organization is Northern Arizona Animal Search and Rescue. Our mission is to search for and rescue lost dogs and bring them home. We also trap dogs that are in medical need to get them that help. We are active in the Coconino County area, ranging from Flagstaff to Happy Jack to Grand Canyon and the Navajo Reservation. Volunteer needs, fosters for animals we take in needing love and safety. We supply all needs during their stay. We also are looking for searchers and state that we will train. Contact info is 928-606-4949 or northernaz2020@gmail.com. Other groups that operate largely outside of the Flagstaff area are Mountain Girl Rescue, https://mountaingirlrescue.com, Tuba City Humane Society, https://tubacityhumanesociety.org, and Black Hat Humane Society, https://www.blackcathumanesociety.org. All are 501c3 nonprofits. All can use donations of water and food bowls, dog collars, harnesses and leashes, toys, towels and blankets, beds, treats, pet food, canned and dry cat, dog, puppy and kitten, and puppy and kitten powdered milk replacers. And of course, monetary donations are always welcome. Enrich your life by giving back. And that was some local news called Animal Welfare, volunteering for local nonprofits that help pets. Now we will be reading an obituary in memory of Dolores Baca. August 23rd, 1936 to April 5th, 2025. Dolores Lali Baca, age 88, of Glendale, AZ, passed away April 5th, 2025, surrounded by loved ones. She was born August 23, 1936, in Flagstaff, AZ, where she resided until 2023, when she went to live with her daughter, Pam, in Glendale. She will be remembered as a caretaker to many and a fierce defender of her family and faith. She was always there if you needed advice or just to listen. She loved being with her grandchildren and many great-grandchildren. Dolores was also a lifelong patron of the Catholic Church. She loved baseball and loved watching her Diamondbacks every season. She loved to have a good time and was always the life of the party. She is survived by her only daughter, Pam Baca, grandchildren, Robert Garner, Ava Cassis, and Erica Amaral, 10 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. Also, her five sisters, Celia Hess, Mary Ellen Magaña, Eleanor Hernandez, Yolanda Scott, Carmen Ware, two brothers, Stefan Magaña and Andrew Magaña, countless nieces and nephews, and other family. She is preceded in death by her husband, Elmer Emmy Baca, and her son, Robert Bobby Baca, her parents, Vivian and Joe Magaña, brothers, George Magaña, Joe Magaña Jr., Arthur Archie Magaña, Charlie Magaña, and her sister, Rosie Montoya. A memorial service will be held on Friday, May 2nd, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Chapel. Rosary will be at 10 a.m., Mass at 11:30 a.m., the cremation burial immediately after at Calvary Catholic Cemetery, and repass at Our Lady of Guadalupe Chapel Church following the burial. She will be deeply missed, but remain forever in our hearts. The next article for today will be Coconino National Forest planning multiple prescribed burns from April 28th to May 3rd. The Coconino National Forest is planning to conduct 5 different prescribed burns, with the first beginning April 28th and the fifth lasting until May 3rd. The burns, which will be on both the Flagstaff and the Mogollon Rim Ranger districts, may be changed or canceled last minute if conditions do not meet criteria outlined in advance. Should wind and weather conditions become unfavorable, ignitions will be halted and project plans will be postponed, changed, or canceled. Horseshoe Maxwell Springs. Scheduled for either Monday, April 28th or Tuesday, April 29th, the project is located 1.5 miles north of Belmont and will cover 369 acres. Smoke could impact U.S. Highway 180 in and around the Fort Valley area during the day. At night, smoke impacts are possible to Belmont and Interstate 40 in the Belmont area. An area closure is in effect until April 30th. Blue Ridge Urban Interface. Located 7 miles northeast of Clint's Well, the project is scheduled from Monday, April 28th to Thursday, May 1st. The burns, taking place on 3,181 acres, will be conducted over 2 days. In the evening and early morning hours after the burn, smoke will likely impact some areas of Route 87 near the burn. Smoke may also impact the Greater Blue Ridge and the Clear Creek Pines communities. Due to the burn, the Arizona National Scenic Trail will be rerouted to Forest Road 211 to go around the burn area. West Fork Crater Sinks. Scheduled to begin on either Wednesday, April 30th, or Thursday, May 1st, The burn is located 13 miles southwest of Flagstaff, spanning 1,795 acres, 955 are national forest land, and 840 are state land. Smoke should stay localized to the burn area, with a slight chance of overnight impacts to U.S. Highway 89A in the Fry Canyon area near Forest Road 535A. Sedona and the village of Oak Creek may see impacts, especially in the evening hours after the burn. Horseshoe Kendrick. Scheduled for Thursday, May 1st and Friday, May 2nd, the project is 17 miles northwest of Flagstaff, on the west side of Kendrick Park. Broken up across the 2 days, the 2,761-acre burn is planned for 1,398 acres on May 1st and 1,363 on May 2nd. Doney Park and Cosnino are expected to be impacted by smoke, but it is expected to be light. Interstate 40 could be impacted at night, with a significant amount of dead and down wood on the western side of the project from the 1995 Horseshoe Fire. The smoke will produce more smoke than other areas. Sawmill, scheduled for Thursday, May 1st to Saturday, May 3rd. The burn will be 10 miles southeast of Mormon Lake. Burning 1,604 acres, the project may have smoke impact I-40 around Twin Arrows and Winslow. Smoke will be noticeable to vehicles along I-17 in the Stoneman Lake exit area. Coconino National Forest believes the burn may be postponed due to wetter weather conditions. Updates will be posted on our Coconino National Forest Prescribed Burn Projects INSA webpage, which is updated anytime new information is available. And that was the article, Coconino National Forest Planning Multiple Prescribed Burns from April 28th to May 3rd. Up next, we have a myriad of news briefs. The first one is MNA selects residents for 2025 Naminka Institute. The Museum of Northern Arizona, MNA, has selected six emerging artists to participate in the 2025 Naminka Institute from April 27th to May 11th. This year's residents include Pato Aguilar, Jaden Chavarria, and Anna Paula Monobe from Tucson, Kelsey Phillips and Christian Lubarski Ford from Phoenix, and Maria Gomez from Basalt, Colorado. They were chosen from a group of 30 applicants. The Naminka Institute is a 2-week fine art residency during which participants collaborate with artists Dan Naminka and Arlo Naminka. It is supported in part of the Philip M. Smith Trust and, according to the announcement, honors the well-known Hopi Tewa family of artists and their dedication to nurturing developing artists. Participating artists will have access to the Museum of Northern Arizona's Easton Collection Center to study historical and contemporary pieces. The residency also includes hands-on studio sessions, a stay in cabins on the museum grounds, and a visit to Wupatki National Monument. Work created by the artists during the Naminka Institute will be displayed in an exhibition and reception event at MNA on May 9th. Museum members and invited guests will be able to engage with the artists and their work. The Institute's logo is an interpretation of the six Hopi cardinal directions created by Dan Naminka, with a meaning behind every color. From the Tewa Hopi community, Dan Naminka has been a professional sculptor and painter for over 50 years, focusing on themes of place, time, and culture. Arlo Naminka is a multidisciplinary artist and Dan's son. His artworks are minimalist sculptures made of natural materials. More information can be found at musnaz.org. NHA adds primary care provider to Flagstaff office. Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, announced on Monday the addition of another primary care provider to its Flagstaff office. Madeline Tilley, FNP, is now accepting patients at the NH Primary Care Clinic at 1895 North Jasper Drive, Suite 3, which opened in a new expanded location in January. According to NIH's announcement, Tilly has over a decade of experience in healthcare, with an approach to care based in empathy, inclusivity, and integrity. She holds a Master of Science in Nursing from Grand Canyon University, an undergraduate nursing degree from Appalachian State University, and is board certified with the American Academy of Nurse Practitioners. She is committed to providing holistic care that recognizes the interconnectedness of physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being, according to the announcement. Madeline is passionate about serving the local community, and we know that she shares NIH's commitment to delivering high-quality care to every patient, said NIH Medical Group President Pasquale Bernardi, MD. We are thrilled every time we add more primary care providers to Flagstaff, as we know the importance of having many options to choose from when booking an appointment. Appointments at NIH's primary care office can be made by calling 928-913-8800 or online at nahealth.com/northern-arizona-healthcare-medical-group-flagstaff. The last news brief for today is partnership to provide pediatric cardiology in Flagstaff. Northern Arizona Healthcare's NIH Children's Health Center recently started a partnership with Phoenix Children's Hospital to provide cardiology care for pediatric patients in Flagstaff. Families are now able to receive pediatric cardiac care in Flagstaff instead of needing to travel elsewhere. The Children's Health Center, CHC, is currently accepting referrals for new patients and will continue services previously provided by other pediatric cardiologists, according to NIH's announcement. CHC accepts most major insurances and will work with patients to ensure services are covered before receiving treatment. The U.S. News & World Report ranked the Phoenix Children's Hospital first for cardiology pediatric service in Arizona and third in the Southwest. CHC 5130 North Highway 89 provides one-on-one care for children, including both general wellness and specialty services. Among its offerings are rehabilitative services, multiple specialty clinics, audiology services, nutrition specialists, and a safe child center. More information about pediatric cardiac care appointments can be found by calling 928-773-2054 or visiting nahealth.com/children's-health-center. The next article is Dumpsters for Pine Needle Disposal Open in University Heights This Week. Got excess pine needles? The City of Flagstaff is placing roll-off dumpsters in the University Heights neighborhood through Friday, May 2nd, to facilitate disposal of those pine needles. The dumpsters are part of a pilot program to provide residents with an opportunity to remove organic materials from their yards and reduce the risk of wildfire danger. No other trash or non-organic materials should be placed in the dumpsters. The dumpsters will be located at the intersection of Walkup Drive and Schellenbarger Drive on West Dolores Lane off of University Heights and University Highlands Park. Although located in the University Heights neighborhood, they are open to all city residents. Originally, the dumpsters were scheduled to be placed in University Heights from March 31st to April 7th. The city cited unforeseen logistical complications as the cause of the delay. An updated schedule for placing dumpsters in additional neighborhoods has not yet been released. A press release stated the city will continue to work diligently to deliver this pilot program and avoid any further delays. Earlier this year, the Public Works Department announced a reduction in the frequency of residential bulky trash pickup, a service that many residents previously relied on for pine needle removal. At the time of that announcement, some city council members expressed concern about the change and a desire for alternative yard waste disposal options. In addition to the launch of the city's dumpster collection pilot program, Coconino County's Willard Springs Green Waste Site opened ahead of schedule this year. All county residents can drop off organic waste, including pine needles, free of charge on Fridays and Saturdays. The Flagstaff Fire Department recommends that residents remove excess pine needles from their yards and areas near their homes to lower the risk of wildfire danger. Residents are also encouraged to review the department's Wild Land Fire Action Guide to prepare for the coming summer months. The guide is available at flagstaff.az/gov/wildfire action. And that is all of the time that we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona and Flagstaff, I am volunteer reader Julia. Thank you for listening.